Extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Welcome back to Sunday Vibes Extra Time, the Football Daily Podcast. This is going out on Christmas Eve's Eve. So I hope you're enjoying yourself. I hope you're opening your presents. Today we're going to be running down our manager of the year, our transfer of the year, our surprise of the year, and most importantly, our unsung hero of the year. No facts with Rafa Benitez, no Rosehead this week. We're keeping it short, we're keeping it sweet, so you can enjoy your turkey. Let's crack on.
Okay, so I'm starting with the manager of the year, and my pick is Pablo Machin. I thought about someone like Didier Deschamps, because as much as I don't like him, he did win the World Cup this
Boring.
Year.
Boring. I was and very close to picking Didier Deschamps.
And also, I feel like there's a slight difference between manager of the year and best manager of the year, if you know what I mean. Like, you could, for instance, pick a manager here who defined the year. Like, was Mourinho a good manager this year? No. But did he define the year more than any other manager? Kind of got a case.
See, I thought you were going to say relatively speaking, as opposed to which manager just won a shed load of trophies.
Sure.
See, yeah. I've gone for the best. I think manager of the year is the best manager of 2018. That's how I've been.
But I think that given the context he's in, Pablo Machin was arguably the best manager of the year.
Okay.
That I've not gone for a hipster choice here. Like, I think Pablo Machin has done an amazing job.
I love the
year.
Way you pronounce his second name, you sexy devil.
Thank you. So obviously, he was managing Girona in the first half of the year, the latter half of the 17-18 season, and now he's at Sevilla. And I'm a really big fan of him. I just think he's a great manager. You know, he was at Girona for about 4 years, I think, and he's still only 43 years old. When he took charge of Girona, they were rock bottom of the Segunda Liga. They were in 22nd place in March, and they finished 15th.
This prior to Pep Guardiola's brother taking over?
This was, I think, like in the early days of Girona. So he moved there from Numancia, but I don't really know what the situation was. I think that was just pure improvement. And obviously, it was March, so he couldn't make any signings. Mm. So I think they were taken over maybe shortly after that, but somebody would have to fact check me on that. Anyway, next year, having finished 15th, narrowly avoiding relegation, they finished third the following year. They took 31 points more than in the previous campaign. Then they made the playoffs 2 years in a row, but failed to win promotion. Before, in 2017, they came second, made it to La Liga for the first time in their history. And then I think that, look, is there an advantage in bringing all these talented youngsters in from Man City? Yes. However, blending those youngsters with experienced talent is a more difficult job than you might think. I think, you know, we've seen Udinese try and do it, and I think that he's done just a phenomenal job getting the most out of that team. They finished 10th in their first season in the top flight ever, and expected points, expected goals, all that stuff backs that up. And then as a result got the Sevilla job. They just finished 7th last season, bit disappointing. They turned a 14 million euro transfer profit in the summer. They sold 90 million euros worth of players, and they spent 74. And they're second. They're second after 16 games.
Yeah.
And not only are they second, but they deserve to be second. Expected points, expected goals, everything has them second. They're doing it playing a really exciting kind of football. They've a little overperformed in defence by about 5 goals, but they've underperformed in attack by about 3 goals. So it balances out. They're kind of in the range, right? Like, and when you look at the value of their... the value he's got out of existing players at the club. Ben Yedder, expected goals plus expected assists per 90 this season. Gone from 0.79 last season, which is already amazing, to 0.95. Andre Silva from 0.45 to 0.77. Sarabia up from 0.51 to 0.8. Now, looking at Transfermarkt, I worked out that Transfermarkt tends to massively underestimate the value of players, right?
Mm,
it'll be like Harry Kane, he's worth 50 mil.
I respect that though. They refuse to partake in the chaos of the modern transfer market.
They're just refusing to partake in inflation.
Yeah, exactly. They're like Arsene Wenger, when Arsene Wenger would be like, you're worth 30 mil in a market where that player would go for 100 mil. But even assuming that they underestimate this kind of stuff, since the summer, the value of those three players I mentioned has gone up by a combined 20 million euros. So if you get a manager in and in 5 months he's increased the value of your squad by 20 million.
Yeah.
That guy's doing a great job.
And is that Transfermarkt 20 million?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really 80.
Yeah.
So
They say Andre Silva's worth 30, Wissam Ben Yedder's worth 30, Sarabia's worth 35.
To be fair, I think Andre Silva would have gone for about 30.
But I don't think they'd have sold at 30 because they spent more than that. Milan.
You don't think Milan would have sold at 30 to Wolves? I feel like Wolves would have. Wolves would have taken.
But if they would, then why wouldn't Wolves have done that rather than spend what looks like it's going to be 30 on Raul Jimenez, who has been good, but do I think he's as talented as Andre Silva? No, I don't, and he's older.
So if we compare this to Sevilla's modern history, how does it weigh up against someone like Sampaoli's season? Has he brought all the attacking flair of Sampaoli, the bit more defensive solidity, a bit more sustainability, Pato?
Yeah, I would say so. I think that Sampaoli, they played on the counter-attack a lot that season, and Sampaoli did a great job of getting them kind of ready to turn into this side. But bearing in mind, they lost the fulcrum of that side this summer in Nzonzi. Mm. I mean, they've had to completely recalibrate. Obviously, they have the advantage of having tremendously talented players there, like Eva Banega. They brought in Quincy Promes in the summer, so they've got actually quite a lot of depth. But defensively, they look they're kind of middle of the table. But actually, when you look at expected goals against and shots against and stuff, they're pretty much the same level as Barcelona. Mm. Barcelona are like 11th in La Liga for expected goals against so far.
And they're having a poor season defensively for their standards, yeah, which is a box standard season for anyone else.
So Sevilla doing that, though, having sold Longley to Barcelona and replaced him with a 21-year-old Yuri Nyanyong.
Oh, wow. That pronunciation is actually spectacular.
Having brought in a 21-year-old centre-back in La Liga, I mean, and also Monchi's gone. Let's bear that in mind. They don't have Monchi there anymore.
And it's not affected their numbers dramatically.
They've got better. I mean, it's actually remarkable. And I think to get this performance out of this team, particularly to get an exciting attack out of this side, and to do it having just changed in the summer. If they win the league this season, it'll only be the second title in their history. And don't quote me on this.
Oh, he's going to say it.
But I think if they finish in the top two, it'll be the first time they've done that since 1956-57.
Is that true? That's mental.
That's mental.
That is crazy, but believable. Right? When we were doing prep for last week's episode, and I had Valencia, I think they're the only team to break the top four. If they did so again this year, they'd be the only team to get in the top four back-to-back for the first time in something like 15, 20 years. So Jesus. Totally believable.
Vile. That's vile, though. Top two.
So I don't know. 50. So even top two would be a remarkable performance. And basically, I just think Pablo Machin plays really exciting, fun attacking football. He did a great job at his previous club. He changed jobs in the summer and immediately did another great job. I find it hard to look at that and not think this is a great year. Whereas everyone else I looked at, with the exception of maybe one guy, I feel like they had either a kind of poor start to the year or a poor back end to the year.
Okay. How long do you want to go, or do you want me to go?
Yeah, I'll jump in. Might as well, because mine is also in La Liga. So I actually went to do Eibar, but I realised I've spoke about them a fair bit on Continental Club Sunday Vibes recently. And then actually, when I was weighing up a decision for Eibar, I noticed a team who were doing slightly better with the same sort of similar sort of resources, a similar size club, at least that's how I kind of perceive them.
Atletico Madrid.
And it is actually José Bordalás at Getafe.
And you've gone for this guy as your manager of the year 2018.
Getafe.
He says pouring a Prosecco.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Get out, you little culture vulture. Getafe. I'm from Leicester. It's Getafe, mate. Okay?
Getafe.
Enough said. Not necessarily my manager of the year. Okay, I actually had him down in my unsung hero, but my manager of the year is fairly obvious, and this is a more interesting opening gambit.
Okay.
Oh, so you're doing two?
So I'll...
Cheeky, but we'll allow it.
I'm not going to do two. I'm going to drop in my... Thank you very much for topping up my Prosecco. I'm going to drop in my manager of the year, probably an unsung hero, just for his consistency. I mean, it's not exactly watertight, my sort of rationale, but this is, like I said, probably a bit more of an interesting story. And, I mean, he led El Geta to a seventh place finish in 17-18, and they're currently seventh again on 24 points.
Consistency.
5 points off Real Madrid with the same goal difference, okay? It's pretty much thanks to their rock-solid defence they are where they are, because they've not scored that many goals. And they're only conceding 10.9 shots per game, which is the second best in the division after Eibar. Okay, and we know that La Liga's been a bit of a shitstorm defensively this season.
Agreed.
But Getafe have been the figure of consistency, okay? And, I mean, let's have it right. This guy's not manager of the year, but it's the more interesting story, okay?
Fair point.
Now, in fact... In fact, they only conceded they've only conceded 12 goals so far this season. That's the joint best with Atletico Madrid. Now, they've had a sort of semi-favourable run-in, opening parts of the season, I guess. Yet to play Barca.
Run out, yeah.
Already lost to Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid, but they did beat Sevilla away from home 2-0. Which I found rather impressive, given their
Pablo Machin.
Hello, their current form.
Calling Pablo Machin.
Little dig there. This is a short history of Getafe for anyone interested, just to give you a bit of context.
I don't know anything about Getafe.
It really puts José Bordalás's achievements into perspective here. So they're in the Segunda Division as recently as 16-17. They actually finished third that season. They had to beat Huesca and Tenerife to secure promotion through the playoffs. The first iteration of the club, which was founded early part of the 19th century. That was a bit of a belch from you there. Barney Gumble over there in the corner.
Hello.
The first iteration of the club was actually liquidated in 81-82. You know, what happened to Rangers recently.
Reformed as Sevco.
This is Nuevo Co.
Good. This is Nuco, España. So they reformed in 81-82. They reformed in 83, merged with another side. And reached the top flight again after just 20 years. So this version of Getafe has actually only spent 14 years in the top flight, and they're already finishing as high as seventh.
Okay,
yeah.
Pretty good.
I mean, they only moved into their latest stadium, which is a 17,000 seater.
They're a Madrid club, right?
As late as 98, yes.
Yeah.
And when they got promoted, I think it was the first time four or five clubs from one city had been playing in the top division of a domestic league.
Okay.
But like I said, and their first Spanish international representative came as late as 2006.
Who was it?
Danny Geezer.
Maybe. I know that Francesco Pavon is a big fan. I'm not sure if it was him. He was at Real Madrid, wasn't he? So in context, this makes Bordalás's achievements all the more significant. And also, you know, a big fan of their media work. They once released an advertising campaign asking for sperm donations so they could increase their fan base. In fact, the club produced...
Hang on, what?
Yes, the club produced a 70s-themed porno called Horny Zombies of Getafe that they sent out to donation centres in Madrid.
Sorry, so the idea was that they would breed more Getafe fans?
I think they were real.
So we like 20 years' time, we're going to have loads of fans.
I think they were high. Yeah, I watched it today on Vimeo.
I bet you did.
You do see...
Horny zombies... Jesus.
Yeah, that was so childish.
Maybe they released it around Halloween. That's the only way I can make sense of it. But I think they were highlighting the fact they have a small fan base compared to the rest of their Madrid counterparts. And let's just do something. This is AS Roma Twitter before AS
Roma
Twitter.
That's quite edgy.
Bournemouth aren't making porno.
Yeah, exactly. Send everyone a free drinks voucher.
You just compare them to Bournemouth in your head?
Yeah.
Because I go on to compare them to Bournemouth. Okay. Wavelength.com.
Look at that.
Crazy.
Right, okay, so this is Bordalás part two. This is my closing gambit, okay. my run-in. So he had actually, as a player, never played... This guy's come from obscurity. He's done the hard yards, and you know that I'm a sucker for an underdog, okay? So never played higher than in the fourth division. In fact, Wikipedia has him down as making zero appearances throughout his career.
Okay. Wow.
I'm sure they just weren't keeping data on the Tercera division or whatever the fuck it's called. His management followed a similar path, until he enjoyed success with Alicante, taking them from the regional league to the third division. Got his fingers burnt with Hercules. Getafe and Hercules.
Bless my soul.
Before returning to the third division. But then he led Alaves to the top flight for the first time in 10 years in 15-16, winning the Segunda division. So quantum leap in terms of his achievements there. He's got a league title under the belt. Current win ratio, 43%.
That's not, you know,
the
that's
same
not
as Eddie Howe at Bournemouth.
I knew I recognised the name.
He's the Spanish Eddie
it's
Howe.
The Spanish Eddie
with
Howe.
With another 10 years on him. I think he's 54.
Okay.
But the most valuable player in their squad is £13 million, half of what Alexis Sanchez earns a year. Okay? They spent £1 million in their promotion year, all on Celtic's Stefan Skepovic. You thought... I wouldn't be able to get Celtic into this section. They said it couldn't be done, but he's done it. And thank God they took him off our hands, because he was truly toilet duck and has only spent £30 million since. Eddie Howe, in comparison, spent £125 million in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but it's the Premier League.
It is the Premier League, Joe, but he's finishing seventh in La Liga on a microscopic budget. Can't be scoffed at. Okay, and he's on track to do so again. Expected goals has them performing at about their expected level too, which I was really impressed by, because teams in and around them certainly aren't a stable.
Stable.
That's stable and Ibar. Aren't as stable. So this isn't really a purple patch for them. The metric actually thinks the Madrid side deserve two more goals for their attacking endeavours, but concedes they should have shipped four more. I was at the office till 1 o'clock in the morning, by the way, yesterday, trying to export our latest project.
You're doing a reasonable job.
Hence why I can't fucking talk. But as we've seen with Burnley, the metric doesn't really favour sides who deploy a deep block. Pato could probably go into this a little bit more, because it doesn't really take into account the position the defenders are in when they're not conceding this. When they are conceding this high quality of chance, right?
Yeah.
So a team like this, who's not shipping many shots, might have, well, chances are a good amount of men between the shots that they concede and the ball. So maybe the fact they should have conceded four is a little bit skewed by that. However, expected points, when adjusted for all of that, has them still at seventh, which is pretty impressive. So if they can add a competent striker in January, like Vallecano's Raldo Tomás, who I plugged last week, hopefully they can go one further the next season and finish sixth. But for them to have gone from being a yo-yo team, from relative obscurity to, I mean, consistent seventh place finishes, is a fantastic achievement. He was actually... Jose Bordalas and Hatafe were my unsung hero of the year category.
Okay,
but
have you just blown your load too early then? I hope you're going to provide one later.
No, that's my best part of the script by far. Okay, I ran out of energy, so I was like, I don't really want to talk about Max Allegri. For about 5 minutes after Pato so eloquently, put Machine up front. So that's me. Sorry for reversing the order, chaps, but there we go. Joe, you're next.
Okay, so I'm going to bring it back down to ground, back down to realism.
We all know who your manager is going to be.
You're obsessed with this guy.
You're the most normcore bloke.
It cannot be anybody else other than Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola has to win this.
I think we've all just accepted that like it'd be boring to cover him, right?
Yeah, we kind of have, but I'm going to anyway. I mean, he has actually, in my opinion, produced the greatest team in English football history.
I think that's probably true.
Within three seasons.
I've just mugged you off there, because I thought you were going to do... What's his name? I won't give it away.
No, don't give it away.
Oh, okay, sorry, right.
But no, I completely agree, by the way. I'm taking Pep. Like, Pep has produced, like I just said, an amazing side, broke pretty much every record in English football within 12 months. He had significant injuries in that time with no real replacements, looking at the likes of Benjamin Mendy, which he spent wad on at 50 million. Managed to coach Fabian Delph into becoming a full-time left-back.
That can't be underrated.
Who was actually great. Imagine, all season.
You know, people look at like other squads around the Premier League and go, well, we're not really good enough for the top four. Is Fabian Delph good enough to win a season at 100 points, playing nearly every game at left back? No.
And everyone's forgotten as well that people kicked up a massive fuss about the money they spent on Kyle Walker. Everyone said, well, he's not world class. And now a year later, everyone's like, well, he was always the best right back in the world,
yeah,
wasn't he?
No, he wasn't. Absolutely not. Was he? Was John Stones this level before Pep Guardiola got
his
hands
on him? Was Laporte?
Absolutely.
Loads of people had a look at Laporte and decided against it.
It's totally bizarre, I think, some of the narrative around it, because Pep Guardiola, for me, is just by far and away, there's not even a candidate that comes close to his level of managerial ability now.
It's easy to discount the way he assimilated his new players into that side as well. Look at Laporte. He is a fucking monster.
Do you know, like, people once upon a time kind of, there was arguments to be made that Jose was a similar level to Pep. Wasn't there? There really was.
In like 2011, yeah, sure.
Whereas now you look at it, they are as far apart as it's possible to be. There's nobody in the world that is even fit to lace Pep Guardiola's boots as a coach right now.
Yeah, you've gone from Jose Mourinho going toe-to-toe Pep in that Madrid
side. Another name I did consider for this was Maurizio Sarri.
I think that's fair.
But... I just couldn't weigh anything close to what he was doing, Guardiola, last year. I mean, Guardiola actually had arguably his greatest season as a coach. I know that he won the treble. No, he didn't win the treble with Barcelona, but did he win the treble?
Yeah, he won
Barcelona?
The sextuple.
Yeah, the sextuple with Barcelona. But, you know, most points in his entire career
that's
last
produced by Hatafa.
Most points in his entire career last season at City. More than
that's,
he ever got a
Barcelona. And with no Messi, no, you know, Lewandowski, Robin Ribery. Like, I mean. No, I
in the best league in the world.
I think his Man City last year was as good as any Pep Guardiola team that I've seen.
Yeah.
Even though I wouldn't argue that many of them were in like the greatest team of all time, whereas that Barcelona team.
They had an answer for every problem.
I do think the word genius is thrown around too much, especially in sports, where it's just like for a lot of people they don't really think about it. But he is that. Like he is there are other people who are very good managers and they're good technicians, they're good problem solvers. But Pep is one of the few people who's that and also a visionary. Like, he's like if Cruyff had been better, is how I think of him.
Cruyff plus one.
That's a big compliment. Well,
no Guardiola without Cruyff. He'd be the first to admit that, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I think it just has to be Pep. Like, people stack it up, like 99 Man United team, the Invincibles, maybe you're looking at Mourinho's 04, 05 Chelsea team.
2008 Man United.
2008 Manchester United, potentially.
But, I'd say 2010 Chelsea as well, but, very good.
I look at all of those sides and I think, would any of them beat this season? I don't think City would whack them. Yeah, I actually think City would whack them.
Especially
the teams
from like 2004, 2005 Chelsea team versus this City team. I think they'd pull them apart. I really do.
The volume of goals they're scoring as well. The amount of times they've scored over four goals since Pep Guardiola took charge.
It's crazy.
Double the amount.
They're averaging.
Any other side combined, right?
A couple of weeks ago, you were looking at Liverpool versus City, and City were still top at that point. And they conceded the same number at that point, I think, as well. But Liverpool had scored like 24. And City had scored 40. Like, I mean, they're just scoring three goals a game.
In 2018,
it's just normal.
In 2018, they're averaging 2.9 goals per game.
Jesus.
It's just obscene. 2.9 goals per game. Like, last season, I was looking at the possession. It was so dominant. You know, their average possession last season was 71%.
Jesus.
Across the course of a season.
See, this is the thing. What we've done here is we've done the kind of like Modric winning the Ballon d'Or choices, but realistically the best player in the world every year is Messi and has been since he was 19. Yeah. And similarly with Pep, you could argue the best manager in the world every year since Guardiola became a manager pretty much has been Pep.
Yeah. I just think, look, Guardiola this year, it's just unarguable. There's nobody even in world football. I know that Zinedine Zidane won his third Champions League in a row, so you could potentially argue him, but
Are we going to do the most boring shit in the world then and say that Pep Guardiola's the fucking manager of the year?
It's disgraceful if you award it to Pablo Machine over Pep. I'm sorry,
yeah, I mean,
it is.
He's got a point. The Machine. Paul Machine.
Bert Kreischer over it.
You're tough. Yeah, I mean, at least there's a nice variation there. All three of us, you know, I think would agree on Pep Guardiola, wouldn't we? But not conducive to an interesting podcast.
Are we happy to say Pep then?
Shall I go straight into the transfer, or do you want to
transfer? Go straight into transfer.
I'll go straight into the transfer then, and I think I'm going to throw Virgil van Dijk as my transfer.
Again, normcore choice, but hard to argue with.
Season. I think the most influential signing of any team across Europe.
Didn't
season.
Win them anything.
Virgil van Dijk didn't win them anything. You could argue that. But equally, I mean, I was looking at some of the stats today, and in Klopp's first 50 games at Anfield for Liverpool, just not at Anfield, but like for Liverpool as a whole, we're conceding 1.3 per game. Second season at Anfield, 1.2 per game. First 6 months of 17-18, that rose back up to 1.24 per game. They conceded 28 in the first 23 games there. Since Van Dijk's taken charge of that back line, that's dropped to 0.5
Jesus
per 90.
Jesus Christ.
Over,
and you've also upgraded in fullback.
Yeah,
Robertson,
I was going to say,
I agree.
Let's not go crazy.
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
TAA and Robertson are big upgrades. And Gomez has taken a leap this year. And also he's added much more defensive stability with Fabinho and Keita this season.
I completely agree. But having said that, Robertson was there for the first 6 months. He didn't join in January. He was there for the first 6 months of that season. Conceded 28 and 23.
His transition to becoming an elite player in his position was arguably bigger than Virgil van Dijk's from Southampton. From a centre-back at Southampton to a centre-back at Liverpool. Robertson's. So Robertson, I mean,
Robertson, yeah, from Hull,
his adjustment period, is understandable. So it kind of
But I
kind of
feel like
sense.
All of these positives, Robertson improving as a left-back, Trent Alexander-Arnold putting himself
he's
forward
also
for
played
being the best young right-back in the world.
They also dropped the press a lot in the second half of last season.
They
press so much less vigorously than they ever did, actually.
He's but do you think they've been able to do that because of Van Dijk?
Partially, but also I think they realised that they were getting the shit kicked out of them for pretty much the first half of the season last year. They were conceding very few shots, but really high-quality shots. Second half of the season, carried on conceding very few shots, but the quality went way, way down.
Yeah, I also feel like Van Dijk has improved so many players. Like, I look at Joe Gomez. I think Joe Gomez has been a talent for a while, but let's not forget, this was a lad who was on loan at Derby County not two seasons ago. And I'm now looking at Joe Gomez as one of the best young centre-backs in England.
And no doubt he's learned a lot from Van Dijk.
But does that take
going back to last season, Liverpool lost an awful lot of ties to teams that deployed a defence, a deep block, and then pumped it long, didn't they? And now you've got Virgil van Dijk. His aerial presence can't be underestimated. And I think the only person that rivals him in that sense is Laporte, and he wins about 75% of his headers.
I was torn by Laporte.
He also, by the way, hasn't been dribbled past this season. I kept looking at this recently because I've been writing about young centre-backs, and it's very difficult to assess it's very difficult to assess young centre-backs, right? Because, you know, tackles and interception numbers are often dependent on how you're playing. But I like to look at who scored it. If you look at their tackle numbers, it will tell you how many times they're dribbled past out of the tackle attempts they make.
Mm.
And Van Dijk hasn't been dribbled past this season. Now, partially that's a function...
0 times.
Yeah, partially that's a function of him playing very deep. Centre-backs are rarely dribbled past overall.
Mm.
But he's also incredibly strong, incredibly fast, and reads the game well. Yeah. I mean,
and he's also an incredible distributor.
The thing is, if he'd gone to City, I think he would have been amazing. If he'd gone to Chelsea, he would have been amazing. Had he gone to United or Arsenal, do I think he'd be this amazing?
But
I'm not quite sure.
But I think that was such a significant move for not only him and Klopp, but for Liverpool as a club to say we're going to go out there, we're going to break the world record fee on a defender, and we're going to take him out of Pep Guardiola's hands. Imagine if Van Dijk had joined City. Like, it would be obscene.
That'd have been filthy.
It'd be obscene.
I would have quite liked.
It would be the same. But it'd be the same thing.
Although I do like
is,
the Laporte John Stones dynamic
for sure. Yeah, but I would still take Van Dijk over both.
As Van Dijk.
Oh, I'm not so sure about Laporte, but okay,
I'd pair Laporte with Van Dijk.
I get your point.
It's the same sort of thing. I thought to myself a couple of weeks ago. Imagine if Jorginho had joined City in the summer. What would we have been looking at this season?
Imagine if any midfielder had joined City in the summer.
But that particular player,
Fernandinho, is still having an
incredible season.
So. I wonder if Jorginho's mobile enough for City. If I was City in the summer, I know it's easy to say this with the benefit of hindsight because he's had a great 18-19 so far. Imagine if they bought Alan in the summer, who's much more similar to Fernandinho stylistically, right? You know, like, Jorginho's a lot slower, more of a passer. Alan is just going to fucking hair around the field and kill people. That's exactly... Imagine putting him in City.
Yeah, I do know
what
you mean.
The carnage that would have ensued.
But equally, like, the controlling factor City exerts anyway. Like, I think Jorginho would have been a monster in that side. But for me, Van Dijk, I think, has had the most effect on a single team of any transfer I can think of over the last
year. Gone to the Champions League final, they end the season. They end the year top of the league.
Bit unlucky with that. End the year top of the league, Champions League final. If it wasn't for Loris Karius, anything could have happened in that as well.
And Sergio Ramos.
Go on, who you got for signing, Pato?
I've gone for somebody who also has not won anybody anything, though he did win a league title this year. But I think he might win somebody something. And I've gone for Paco Alcácer.
I think
that he was a really smart risk for Dortmund in the summer. And imagine if he does deliver them a title.
Why was there a fixed fee? Because
everyone had stopped rating him.
On
everyone
Barcelona's behalf.
If they'd got him when he left Valencia, then he would have been... you only get 7 good glasses out of a bottle of Prosecco.
No good, mate.
Everyone knows that. So he's already got 12 goals in the league this season.
Yeah.
And a lot has been made of the fact that he's done that in very little time. So 469 minutes, 12 league goals, which is brutal. But... I think it was actually a typical
savage
Dortmund of yesteryear move. You know, Dortmund are top of the league. They're fifth for XG, but they're first for goals scored. And a large part of that has to come down to Sancho and Paco. They've scored 42 after 16 games, which is mental. That's 10 goals more than Bayern. And to be honest, when you're Dortmund, you do need a little bit of luck. You do need a positive swing. You need someone going on a hot streak to win the league. And that's exactly what they've got out of Paco.
I mean, it's a lot of luck, isn't it, at the moment?
Well,
on multiple fronts.
12 goals off 5 XG from Paco, not great. but if his XG
Elite.
Per 90 is still 0.94. So if he goes back to that level for the remaining 18 games of the league season, we'd still expect him to end the league on 29 league goals.
His shot numbers aren't huge and they've dropped dramatically in the Champions League as well. That's my one thing with Paco. When they're not having it their way, he can become a little bit anonymous.
But the location of his shots is incredible, so I wouldn't go too much on his shot locations.
They're very much in front of goal, aren't
what
they?
I'd worry more about is his sub effects. If you come on for the last 20-30 minutes of the game, you tend to face stretched defences, and with Dortmund, they just have the talent to take advantage of that. But I think even if his output drops by a third and he ends up like a 0.65, 0.7 XG per 90 striker, he'll be a great forward for Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
Like, his value on Transfermarkt at the moment is €40 million. Dortmund have paid €23 million for him. What's that, £20 million?
Mm.
£20 million. That's what Bournemouth paid for Nathan Aké. £20 million. I can't get over the value for that. And I do kind of want to take a... The reason I'm pleased about this as well is because I feel like I've been delaying a victory lap on Paco. Because when he was at Valencia, I wanted Arsenal to sign him after the 2015-16
season. But
what went
so wrong at Barca?
He just didn't play. What went wrong?
But if you're Paco, surely you're seeing the slow decline of Luis
Suarez. At Barca, he got a respectable amount of goals.
At Barca, he played 2,300 minutes, and in that time, he contributed to 23 goals. He scored 15 and assisted 8.
Why were Barca selling him at that cheap price? There must be something wrong. There's got to be something wrong.
Well, why did Barca let Thiago Alcantara go for 18 million euros?
True, it's very true.
You know, like, Barca make mistakes all the time. Barcelona are a horribly run club. And, like, look, I also don't deny that he might have just been a bad stylistic fit for them. Whereas at the time, I felt he was a good stylistic fit for Arsenal. Mm. In a way, I felt like he was the pound shop Aguero. He's a small guy who's very mobile, can create as well as score. He can dribble a little bit as well.
Odd that they chose to keep Munir over Paco, though.
Yeah, but Munir didn't cost them anything, and I think they can sell him. I don't think they care that much. Like, but I wanted him after the 15-16 season. He just turned 23 that summer, and he'd been involved in 19 goals the previous year, which is the same number that Griezmann was involved in his 22-year-old season. So at the time, I was like...
Is that how old he is?
No, he's now 25.
I was going to say.
But after that season, he turned 23 at the end of the year, and his 22-year-old season, 19 goals and assists in the league. And I was like, this is the guy. This is the guy you get, because he was cheap. He went to Barca for 30 million euros because they needed money, because they were absolutely shot to bits with the tax man. So I thought he could make the leap, and it's been delayed a little bit because of Barcelona. But this just seems like smart work from Torque again. Like, this is the kind of stuff that we used to praise Dortmund for a couple of years ago. They've taken a forward who is a little bit kind of undervalued.
On the peripheries, yeah.
They've made him worth, I'd say, probably 50 million euros again. And they've managed to get him on a permanent deal for 23 million because they were willing to take a low-level risk.
And the thing about Dortmund strikers is the service is just always there. And even Favre's system this season has.
I mean, it helps that Sancho has... exploded, and Brun Larsen has exploded, and Royce is fit, and Guerrero's having a great season.
Royce is having the best season in years.
And Delaney and Witzel have landed hot. Like, but I just look at this and I think, if I take a loan move with a 23 million euro option to buy, and I exercise that option before December, and I might have a chance of winning the league in a league which was seen as a one horse race. I don't know. That's fucking great transfer.
And I've doubled their value in that very small period of
time. Yeah, that's a staggering transfer to me. And so you could argue that maybe the proof of this will be in the pudding. Like, if they don't win the league next season, if they don't win the league, rather, in 2019, then maybe I've called this one a little bit early. But you know what? Paco has won exactly the same number of trophies for Dortmund as Van Dijk has won for Liverpool. And
it's a very good point. And they've paid 50 million less.
And they've paid 50 million, yes. Same age, same-ish age.
Yeah, no, I think Van Dijk's 27 now.
I thought he was 26.
No, 27.
Okay, fair dues.
Okay. I mean, I went for a fairly obvious choice. This was the last section I wrote. And as you can see on my sheet of paper, I just have one word.
Okay.
And it's I'm Eric Laporte. And
it was two words.
Swigging out the bar. Dirty dog. Sorry, what did you say?
I'm Eric Laporte. You said you had one word on your sheet.
And then you went, I'm Eric Laporte.
I'm Eric Laporte.
Listen, I explained that. I'm starved of sleep. It just says Laporte, actually. I've done myself over there. But yeah, I went for Laporte just because in the first 15 games of this season, Manchester City, it was incredible how they got better defensively from a season wherein they scored over 100, well, I think it was 106 goals. They got 100 points, Centurions, the first time. Like, in many ways, we do take it for granted because it's Pep Guardiola and because of the sheer amount of attacking talent they've had. So you look at that side and you look at where there's value to be had and you look at the ways in which they've improved this season, and it's mainly on the defensive end.
Yeah.
And obviously, this is very fine margins we're discussing, but they went down from conceding around 2.3 shots on target per game from last season to about 1.6.
That is crazy. Like that
this season.
That John Stones Laporte axis is just unbelievable. You know they're born a day apart.
And do you know
that's freaky to me, man. That's bloody weird.
Do you know what I like about them? That they're so goddamn similar. They're both so brave on the ball, so willing to step out of the line, play dangerous balls, but have pass accuracy of, you know, post 93-94%, heavily involved in play. Never, ever leave Edison without an option. They don't need, more often than not, two fullbacks, City, because their centre-backs are good enough to spring attacks down the middle or find Fernandinho with those sort of, line-splitting balls, I guess we'd call them. But the only, if Man City go on to concede, go on to average around 1.5 shots on target per game, which is, I mean, how desperate does that sound to every other team? Then they will surpass the current holders of this record, which just so happens to be Rafa Benitez's Liverpool side. I think the season maybe after they won the Champions
That's
League.
That's crazy to me.
And I think in many ways, you kind of, we look at Rafa Benitez when he was an elite level coach, and he's still a very, very good coach. Newcastle are extremely fortunate to have a man of his calibre. But when he was winning titles with Valencia, when he was winning Champions Leagues with Liverpool, and you say, okay, he's great because he's mastered one aspect of management.
Yeah, defending.
The defending end, the defensive end.
He needed elite attackers, basically, to do shit on their own.
Yeah, he needed Torres.
Exactly, and he needed Gerrard to score 26 goals on the right-hand side of midfield. But then you just have Pep Guardiola, who's simultaneously doing both. And then this taps into the point Pat was making earlier about him being a genius. If your scoring rate is going up as your defensive, as the amount of shots you concede goes down, then that is just freaky. That is just like once in a kind of generation.
There's normally
sort of
a trade-off somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Look at Atletico Madrid. I mean, they're decreased in both aspects this season, and they're still a very good defensive side. But
or Van Gaal's United is a perfect example.
Perfect.
Van Gaal.
Great defensively. Abysmal.
They took fewer shots than Sunderland per game, but they were so good in defence.
And there just is no... Yeah, there is seemingly, obviously, the sacrifice in terms of preparation and in terms of the players' commitment and understanding of the system. But he's not had to sacrifice his way of playing. He's actually used it.
Do you know what has impressed me so much about Laporte? You know, when I remember Laporte, there was lots of clubs interested, and he got that horrendous leg injury. Mm. He snapped both bones, I think, in his lower leg, didn't he? His tibia and fibula. And that was the
good
kind of moment
back,
people thought, nah, nobody's going to risk it now. Because before that, he was like, people were going, oh, I want Laporte, 50, 60 million, I'll pay it. Broke his leg. Pep took it. It was a relative risk by Guardiola.
It's why he got the move a little bit late,
it was a relative risk to take it, and it has paid off so big.
I mean, in the opening 15 games, like, he started all of them, by the way. He's one of the few players in this Manchester City side that starts every single game. I think he was dropped recently for the League Cup, but that doesn't count. So he's really the kind of fulcrum of that defence. And John Stones, I mean, it's normally someone, Laporte plus someone, right? And I like Laporte plus John
Otamendi
Stones.
Company.
Otamendi came in recently, against Everton.
Yeah.
And they were not great.
Resting in for the Champions League, and they were more defensively suspect than ever, right?
Can I play devil's advocate a little bit on this?
Go on, please.
This season, 0.76 XG conceded per game. Last season, 0.65. So, I don't know.
But there has...
they've gone down a little bit.
I reckon there's been probably three or four instances where...
Blaming Laporte for that.
Wherein that stat would have been supercharged. As in, there's been games, very obvious games.
Is that in all comps?
No, this is in the Prem.
There's been games. I would counter that with... There's been very obvious games where they've maybe had to... They've suffered in adjusting without Otamendi or a Fernandinho starting the season slow and looking like he's aging out, but then picking it back up.
And I feel
recently,
so
Everton
game is responsible for like a sixth of their XG.
Yeah, and exactly. Also, like, I feel like Pep is rotating way more heavily this season, which is allowing teams to probably get more. Not that they're getting lots of shots off on target from good areas, but
do any of us actually think we've seen peak Manchester City this season, despite them improving
ends? Maybe the first. I mean, the Arsenal game, we couldn't let it glove on.
Scary, man.
But I don't know. Like, there's the part of me. This is just to go back to the manager.
And De Bruyne actually
thing.
Does a lot of defensive. Not a lot of defensive work, but his defensive contribution is pretty sound, and he's been out as well.
Yeah, Bernardo Silva's defensive contribution has gone fucking massively.
Are you starting
up
to concede
this
that?
Yeah.
that scampering.
Are you close to conceding that Bernardo is a fantastic player?
Yeah, though, to be in my defence,
a genius.
I will say that he's doing it in a very different position to the position he came up playing. He was a winger. He was always a winger. He was never an attacking midfielder. He was never a midfielder. He was always a winger, and I didn't particularly like him.
Pep Guardiola, coach of the year.
This season, okay, but here's my objection.
Go on.
Just to go back to the manager of the year thing. If City don't win the league this season, it'll be because Pep didn't sign a central midfielder.
True.
That's
true.
And that's impossible to get around.
But Pato, they are going to win the league.
I hope so.
And like you said, I mean, it wasn't for lack of trying. Jorginho, Fred, both these players, you'd imagine, would fare pretty well.
I'll give them Fred.
I've been harping on about it all season, but I still
like Ramsey.
The idea of Ruben Neves at Manchester City. Central midfielders, he's kind of blood in Phil Foden a little bit more.
It depends
what
you want. Like, I don't know what he wants.
He's
going
to sign someone
wants,
in the summer. Or
but January. We haven't seen Manchester City. I think we've seen peak Liverpool.
This season?
Yeah.
I think Liverpool have been bad the first half of the season.
You think they've been bad?
They've been way worse than they were over the back half of last season, both in attack and defence.
I think they've been unfortunate. Like, the game against Burnley springs to mind.
No, but they've been very fortunate in defence, right? They've conceded 9 goals or something off something like 14 expected goals against. They've been tremendously lucky in defence. In attack, a little bit unlucky. But I don't know. Like, I look at Liverpool and I'm like,
but I watched that Liverpool against Manchester United and I thought, this is as good as Liverpool get.
No, they can cut. No, because they didn't create that many big chances. Last season, we saw them cutting teams to ribbons. Like, the back half of last season, they were as good as City. The first half of the season, they weren't. The back half of last season, they were almost as good as City. This season so far, they've been nowhere near as good as City. And City aren't at their best. And Liverpool are maybe closer to their best.
City aren't,
but they're not.
City aren't at their best.
Kate has barely paid. Fabinho is only just coming
into
the side.
City haven't had KDB for the first 5 months.
No,
no. He's the best player in the side.
I'm not saying that City have been near their best. I'm saying that Liverpool, to me, if there's no more to come from Liverpool than a City, I'm not worried at all.
I suppose peak in terms of a starting 11 playing as well as they can. They can, and the game against PSG springs to mind. But yes, you're right. I do concede there's more to come from Keita. Fabinho is starting to look like a much better, well-rounded player. He tried that chip ball into, who was it, Firmino?
So,
about 3 or 4 times against Manchester United.
He was the best.
And the one time it came off,
great.
Yeah, I guess the one time it came off, it looked great. But you could tell there's still a certain amount of ring rust there. But I do concede there's more to come from their players. But in terms of Klopp getting more out of the system, there's a bit more.
The system is what it is, but I mean, I just feel like their starting 11, particularly in midfield, will look very different the back half of the season than it did in the front.
I don't think, I mean, Kate has been injured, hasn't he, and did he also serve a suspension? Like, I don't think he's gone off how we would have expected or how we wanted.
And Fabinho barely played for the first 2 months of the season.
So let's make a decision then. Signing of the
season. So is it signing of the season?
It's between
signing
Paco
of the year,
Dijk,
rather, not of the season.
Of the year.
I would say Paco,
but didn't give me enough in the first 6 months of the year.
I would say
won the league.
He won the league. Does that count?
I know, right?
That was so
it's a little bit underhand.
No blow. I think it's got to be Van Dijk for me.
I
think Laporte has more of a shout. At least he won trophies.
I mean, I knew you'd pick Van Dijk.
I think I'll go Laporte. Just because of the future that you've got from him as well.
If Van Dijk had won the Champions League, it would be him.
But I also think that without Laporte, City still would have won or still would have been in a relatively similar position, owing to Pep's genius and his ability to judiciously swap players out and find those creative solutions. Whereas without Van Dijk, I think Liverpool, like you said, maybe riding a look on the defensive end a little bit at the moment.
Yeah, Lovren and Matic
would be out of it.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I feel like, I don't know.
It's one or the other, isn't it?
They'd have had to buy another really expensive defender in a couple of years' time. City.
Who else has
no City if they couldn't get Laporte?
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, Van Dijk. I don't know. I think Van Dijk's very, very good. But do I think that he's like a once-in-a-lifetime centre-back? Nah, not really.
I'm heavily prejudiced. Right. I think he's bordering that territory.
Nah, come on. He's not even the best centre-back in the world.
Have you seen his free kick against Kilmarnock, you fool?
He's a very good defender, but like, I feel like
he's in the top 5.
Let's give it to Laporte.
I think we
should give it to Laporte. It's 2-1.
Yeah. Okay. Fair play.
Unfortunately, with Paco, mate. If he goes on to win the league, it'll be Paco next year.
We live in a democracy.
I have no worries about it not being Paco.
Pound for pound, Paco is fucking up there.
Yeah, to me, a transfer is like the whole package of the thing. And I feel like that's another reason Laporte might want to come over this. He's a couple of years younger than Van Dijk, and he costs 18 million less.
Yes. That can't be overlooked, can it?
Let's move on to surprise then. Surprise of the season.
Mother...
Am I going in?
So this is super vague. This could be anything.
There's only one answer for this. This absolutely has to be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as manager of Manchester United.
That is a surprise.
Topical.
If anybody had...
Man United are so badly run, it's staggering.
If at any stage, any human on the planet said... By the end of this year, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be manager of Man United.
Didn't hear it.
Yeah, but he did while Mourinho gone.
The morning Mourinho got sacked.
Previous to the Mourinho sacking, if a single human on the planet said it, they'd jump off the cliff.
If someone said to you, took the name out of the equation and said, someone who's won a league in Norway and unsuccessfully coached Cardiff and I think brought in players like Baguette.
Although, let's take that with a pinch of salt, that Cardiff move for me. I know I'm probably a bit of bias.
They were.
Took them over in 18th when
they were
18th.
Definitely destined for the champ.
Yeah, they were. Took them over when they were 18th.
But just in terms of his credentials and his pedigree,
I don't know, 19th, I think. Yeah.
I mean, crack on it. You're right. It's obscure.
There's no way you get a sniff at this job if you weren't a former United player.
Of course not. But
I love that Man United continue to be idiots.
But I actually don't think this is an idiotic move. I actually disagree with you. Don't think this is an idiotic move.
Okay.
I think this is fine. I think United have...
It's not going to get you anywhere.
But we're not going anywhere.
Joe is the Joker of the office, like in the Batman term. Some people just want to see the world burn and he's enjoying the chaos at the moment.
I'm not enjoying the chaos. I actually think this is probably one of the smartest things United have done in a while.
I saw your tweet saying it's smart, right off the season.
This season's a write-off.
I think that's fair.
This season is a write-off. How can anybody pretend that United are going to finish top four? No, we're not. We're not going to win the FA. We're not. If a single human out there thinks we're winning the Champions League this season, get out the room.
Europa League at this point, like, shouldn't be a write-off for you. That should be like...
We can't win the Europa League. How can we win the Europa League this year?
No, getting in the Europa League.
I don't care about getting the Europa League. I couldn't give less of a fuck. I won it 2 years ago. Wolves, I hope we don't win it for 10 years
again. Wolves and Everton are 1 and 2 points behind you.
Yeah, that's fine.
And better form.
It makes no... If I get Pochettino in the summer, I don't give a fuck whether I finish 15th.
That's a big if.
Would you sign the dotted line now? Finish 15th and you get Poch.
100%.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. If Arsenal finish 15th and we got Poch, I'd take that now.
Like there is absolutely nothing for me. As long as we get Poch, I don't care.
But that's 15th. Such a huge if. Like, I understand what you're saying in the sense that as well. Like, if your theory is that Man United players are currently underperforming because of Mourinho, maybe if the manager just gets out of the way and lets them do their thing, then they'll be better.
Which is what he's going to do.
That's probably true. But do I think that they're going to be good over the back half of the season? No, I don't.
I also feel this conflicts with your previous opinions that there is a good side there. There's the core of a good side. So it's not a write-off.
Yes, it is.
No, but your argument's been for the first 6 months of the season that there's a team there and a better coach will get better results.
Yeah, 100%. But the best coach we can possibly get is not available for 6 months. So I will wait 6 months to get a better coach than I will get a mediocre coach.
You don't think you could get a better caretaker?
What's the old Bayern boy doing?
I absolutely don't think we can get a decent caretaker.
I guarantee you could get Heinkers take care.
Jupp Heynckes would lead you to the promised land. Buy him a house and he'll do it.
There's no way we'd have got Jupp Heynckes. United cannot get a caretaker coach that's guaranteed only lasting 6 months, and during that time the whole of the back room's going to be overhauled, your whole medical department's going to be overhauled, like most of your first team,
why someone like Heinckes would be perfect.
I'm sure Heinckes would have been perfect, but I would have been down for Heinckes, but let's have it right. Realistically, Heinckes is not happening. Heinckes was never happy.
Okay. Oh, he's bored living on a hill.
But your argument is always like, we're Man United, money gets shit done, we have money.
It does. So why are we going to get Pochettino?
Maybe you are. But there's no guarantee.
Do you think we're going to get Pochettino?
No.
I don't think it's outside the realms of possibility. Like,
yeah, but
I
think 100% do you think yes or no?
Do I think... Christ.
Next summer, Pochettino to United.
With
yes
a new sporting director that's his choice.
If Real Madrid had a manager...
Real Madrid are going to get Mourinho. Let's all be real.
Really? God. Absolutely nailed down, I would say, you know what? Poch to Man United might happen. But I think because he's got other avenues, he's looking at Solari, he's thinking, you're not going to lash your fucking turnip. I might have an out there if I want to go to a bigger club, should I not get the money to spend post-stadium. But... I would say about 40%, so no.
I think Poch is nailed on joining Man United.
But what if he doesn't join Man United?
Then United have 6 months to plan for that situation.
P-
Bloody hell.
I love like, this. That, like, idiots. Maybe this is me being completely stupid, but every single time we've jacked a manager in, we've appointed a manager immediately after, and every single time it's been a disaster. Like Van Gaal, disastrous.
You sound like Mourinho, Gordon Ramsay.
Disastrous. Yeah. Let's actually, we didn't even plan for Moyes.
Yeah, that is.
That was Alex Ferguson walking into his house going, you fancy the job? Yeah, sound. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, at least now we're going, okay, it's not worked for 3 years. We're going to get a sporting director in. We're going to let the sporting director make the decision.
We've been saying this for a long time. We've kind of seen it come in that Ed Woodward's been making, has refused to make structural changes because he knows that this new way of operating will outlast Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, he is. There's 100%
so yeah,
there's happening.
Clearly an overhaul at the from the top down.
So for a manager, whoever comes in for 6 months, they're not going to have any revolutionary tactics. It's not going to happen because they can't put their blueprint on a team. They're not going to come in and try and change a load of stuff behind the scenes. It's not going to happen because stuff's already happening. It's out of their control. They're going to come in and try and get a bit of a feel-good factor back. The season's already a write-off. We're not finishing top four. Why not? I don't care whether it's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Eric Cantona that's going to come back. And you know, do you know another reason that I like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Oh,
Jesus Christ.
Is because pundits and newspapers will not batter him. They won't. You will not see.
Well, that's a dogmatic way to live, isn't it? Oh, he won't get bashed around in the press.
He won't get bashed around in the press.
Yeah, but why?
Paul Scholes will not be bashing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Oh, fair point.
Like,
why does that even come into your frame of reference?
It does, man. It does. What, would I rather have that, or would I rather
have...
Well,
if you feel like...
Who else could we possibly have got in 6 months? I don't see any better choices out there.
I don't have a huge problem with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Like, it's...
He's going to be fine. He's going to go back to Mulder in May, and that'll be it. Game over, and we'll get Pochettino in. We'll probably get Paul Mitchell or another sporting director in, and we'll restructure the entire club. Let's just get it done in 6 months.
But your idea that this is good seems to be all based on the fact that the end product is going to be good, which is that Pochettino and Paul Mitchell are going to come in.
But even if it's not Pochettino,
that's absolutely fine.
Even if we spend 6 months getting a sporting director that's going to work alongside Leo Jardim, or we spend 6 months getting a sporting director that's going to work alongside Allegri, that gives us 6 months.
You've got a short period of time to stop.
The fact that
every decision
and
we cannot
go any further backwards. Yeah, you like
the you're so not, far away from the other club.
Exactly. Yeah.
You like the fact it's not knee jerk, but that doesn't mean that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the right man.
I don't. But there is no.
Didn't Danny Mills recommend Steve Bruce?
My argument actually is that there's
never
no.
Never had an intelligent opinion.
My argument actually is there's no right man out there for 6 months that's going to come in and improve that to a level that's worth improving it to that level.
Oh, I don't know.
If somebody's going to come in, you were going to go, yeah, that's going to get you top four. You're going to get to a Champions League semi-final, an FA Cup final. Then I'd be like, okay, bring him in then. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so I mean...
Fair enough. I mean, surprise of the year. I don't know why we're arguing this.
Surprise of the year is Solskjaer. Solskjaer as Man United manager with Mickey Phelan as his assistant. Oh, what?
Jesus. We probably shouldn't let Joe lead this. It's kind of a bit of a moot point now doing anything else, isn't it? But we've opened a second bottle of Prosecco, so it doesn't really matter what happens from here on in. Now, my surprise package, fairly obvious, like the rest of this podcast, to be honest, has been Wolves. Now, they're currently 1 point behind United and 1 point ahead of Everton in seventh. So they may have spent £91 million, yes, but they did so on 11 players.
Yes, but this is Jorge Mendes' puppets club.
Shut your mouth. £26 million off that on securing two players who arrived on loan the year before. Okay, so some are overhaul, not as sizable as it first appears. And the last three windows have generally been managed excellently. Although £20 million for Adama Traore.
Oh, what are you talking about?
That's a fun move, you boring bastard.
He's 22. Listen, he's a once in a generation talent. Not at football, but at other things.
I feel like he could be a great wing back at a Premier League club, but I'm not convinced by
him.
Yeah,
there was a time.
Otherwise, as a
midfielder.
Spurs
were linked to them, and I was like, I'll watch that.
Anyway, but that's.
He'd be a great winger on a fucking rugby team, I'll tell you that. Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, that's just my.
So true.
That's just my, like, you know, five Prosecco's deep ramblings. So Nuno Espirito Santo has had to rely on these players to step up from Championship level, basically, hasn't he? So Jota, Bolly.
But none of these players were Championship players.
Yeah, but they both had a good pedigree. Yeah, do concede. Atletico Madrid and Porto, respectively, those two players. But still, no guarantee that they're going to bang at Premier League level.
Come on.
Is it Mbolo who signed for Stoke from.
No, Mbula.
Mbula.
Mbula from Liga.
Who's Mbolo or Mbula?
Braylon Mbolo is
the one that was
Braylon Mbolo was the striker, yeah. Mbolo. Okay.
Mbula's back in France now.
But equally, do you not feel that like the Wolves players that they signed, even in the Championship, were like, you know, they're going to be good?
You haven't even let him make his argument yet.
Because it's a nonsense surprise. It was not a surprise to anyone.
Oh, no, you come back from the toilet.
I'd say Fulham were more of a surprise that they were shit than that Wolves were good.
To caveat the rest of this podcast with Pato's just broken his Prosecco glass.
It's an emergency.
And that we're having a... office party and it starts in about 15-20 minutes.
Hence the sounds of tables moving upstairs.
Yeah, so this last part might feel rushed. Apologies. But they only spent £24 million in their promotion season, Joe. £17 million of that was on
Joe. Do you know why? Because they loaned 11 players, didn't they?
Yeah,
but
that's
all outrageous.
But we can't praise Inter, you know, on one hand for operating in a sound financial fashion, making low risk transfers. You know, with
did we do that?
Players with, I think I did.
I've had some process. I'm not sure.
I'm straw manning the pair of you here.
Okay.
But basically, they operated in a fiscally responsible way, didn't they, fellas?
Yes, but they wouldn't have been able to without Jorge Mendes.
But Espirito Santos is also getting the best out of existing personnel too, like Doherty.
Barry Douglas.
6 goal contributions in 17 appearances from wing-back. Cody looks like a Premier League centre-back, doesn't he?
Yep.
Rui Patricio was a free, and he's... probably one in the top 5 goalkeepers in the league.
They've got the third best defence in the league.
I'm going to keep this short and sweet because we do want to finish.
I do like Wolves. Look, I like Wolves, but they're not a surprise package. I knew as soon as Jorge Mendes got his sticky fingers in there, they were going to be a Premier League side.
No, you didn't know that they would be halfway through the season, 1 point behind Manchester United.
At the start of the season, people were literally predicting them to finish 8th.
If we were talking...
The same people who thought Fulham would finish 9th.
If we were talking over the last 2 years, I would give you this, but I feel like... They came up with a squad that, yeah, we all predicted would finish in the top half, didn't we? Even you?
Yeah, I mean, even
you. Well, no, I mean, like, you're saying you're surprised, yeah.
But to deliver on that promise, okay? And
I agree, it's impressive.
And teams who have been promoted in the last 2 or 3 years and haven't found that way of playing that, you know, it pretty much ensures their success, like a Huddersfield. That was quite the plop in there, mate.
I know.
That Prosecco. Someone should just chop up the Prosecco soundbites of this.
A butler.
Jeeves. Do you remember Ash Jeeves? What a blast from the past.
He never knew what was going on, Jeeves. Remember Lycos?
But you see the way... or NTL dial-up. You see the way that Huddersfield are struggling. That, you know, Fulham, that spending money doesn't guarantee you the performances they've put out. The way in which they've so comprehensively become a Premier League side... I think survival, yes. Finishing in the top 10, yes. But adjusting, like their rise in the last 2 or 3 years has been not unprecedented, but extremely impressive. And like, we've got 10 minutes left, so I'm moving on to Pato.
Oh, yeah, fair dues. My surprise of the year is the Dutch being good.
Woo! Very good.
Win nils.
I expected them to get better this season. I didn't expect them to get this good, basically. I think
under Koeman, no less.
Yeah, I think in a way the story of the Netherlands has been strange because people suddenly started asking when they got rubbish, why are they rubbish? They've always been good. Whereas I think a better question would have been, why were they always good given how small they are? They're not a tiny nation. They've got like 17 million people. That's like a quarter of the size of France. So I think it was quite interesting that that was the way that conversation was framed. And to be fair, it did look like an exciting generation of talent. Depay, De Ligt, Van Dijk, De Jong, Bergwijn, Van de Beek. Like, loads of young talent.
Beek. It's pronounced, actually, mate. Beek.
Yeah, the Beek. The big Beek. I was actually a big supporter of getting Koeman in. Because...
Really? Because that contrasts with your views on his Everton side, doesn't it?
Yes. But I do think that international management is different from club management.
Okay. As Jose is about to find out.
Yeah, so I didn't want Arsenal to sign, like, Roberto Mancini in the summer. But Roberto Mancini, I think, is a really good manager, and I think is a good manager for Italy, certainly.
Fit as well.
Would you say fit?
What, I'd
say
for a man his age,
nice looking. That's an insult.
He's a dilf.
If somebody said you're attractive for a man of your age, I'd be like, fuck you.
Did you see the state of his abs?
29.
Did you see the state of his abs on holiday?
Yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah, I'll give you that. But I mean, I know
great
a lot.
Cheese on those bad boys.
Yeah, but I know some guys with abs where I still wouldn't fuck them. anyway, I think the worst you could say about Koeman is he's a mid-table Premier League manager. Do you not think? And and that's clearly an upgrade on what they've had before, because since Van Gaal left in 2014, they've had Gus Hiddink. That was for the second time. They had Danny Blind, rubbish. And they had Dick Advocaat for the third time. So not the most imaginative work from the KMVB.
Put some respect on Big Dick's name.
Please stop saying that. So I think that getting Koeman in was was an upgrade, and the talent is good, but their performance in the Nations League has been
freakish,
spectacular.
When are they playing England? Because Southgate's going to be in there.
Well, actually, they've only lost twice since Koeman took over. One was to England,
shock,
and the other was to France straight after the World Cup.
Bloody Southgate put him as manager of the year.
Oh, Jesus Christ! They've conceded 9 goals in 10 games, and the only team to have stopped them scoring is England,
no
and
surprise.
That was back in March.
Gareth,
what's wrong with you? You've had some prosecco.
You know, the last 2 minutes has just hit me.
You can hear the leeriness in his voice.
So their last few results, they've beaten Germany 3-0 and France 2-0, and they've drawn away with Belgium and Germany 2. They also beat Portugal 3-0 away earlier in the year.
It's not just the results, though, it's the way you've been playing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just exciting. Like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Walking in Memphis has been fucking sick as well.
Well, yeah, it's just, like, I mean, look, Depay, do I think that we've got lucky with Van Dijk and Depay going supernova just when they have? Yes, I absolutely do.
De Ligt as
and
well.
De Ligt and De Jong have come along at the perfect
that
time.
That will always happen in a national side, though, won't it?
Yeah, though we had a few years of producing fuck all. Like, Quincy Promes was our best player. It was horrific.
Ryan Babel's still getting caps, though, mate.
Yeah,
what's going on?
And Van Persie and Huntelaar were still playing. Schneider was still kind of the fulcrum of the side. But it's a solid managerial appointment. Really good talent has come along at just the right time. And I thought that they'd qualify for the Euros and the World Cup after that. But actually, right now, look like one of the best international sides in the world. Have beaten the reigning world champions, have beaten the champions before that, have beaten the reigning European champions.
Lost to Southgate.
I've got to say, undeniable.
The UEFA Nations League has exceeded all expectations.
Yeah.
It really has, It really has.
It's been fucking mental.
It's produced two of the best England games in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's been mental. I watched the Netherlands like draw 2-2 with Germany, and it was carnage because Germany went 2-0 up and everyone was like, same old Netherlands, same old Germany. Brought it back, drew 2-2. I was fucking screaming. It was so exciting.
Been scoring recently.
This reminds me of like 2008 at the Euros, where the Netherlands were drawn in a group with France and Italy, who'd contested the World Cup final 2 years earlier, and beat Italy 4-0. No, beat one of them 4-1 and won 3-0. And it was, and then got knocked out by Russia, but we don't need to talk about that.
Yeah,
and
but that was when Arshavin decided he was, you know, peak R9.
In what, to be fair, was one of the great European Cup. European Championship games. But I just think I didn't expect the Netherlands to be this good this soon. I'm really excited about where they could go next, and they actually look like they're not going to be embarrassing for the next 5 years, which, believe me, would be a relief.
You're going to bust out some clogs for the office party or what?
I've actually got some clogs.
I bet you have.
You can't say just say that clogs. Like it's a sex thing.
Does your wife ever say
put them up your ass?
Stick the clogs on, Patrick.
I think we need to end this. This has gone awry.
Let's quickly wrap up then with our unsung hero.
You've
of the
changed
year.
Colour, Tomlinson.
Oh, I know.
Tomlinson has been sliding up the Dulux colour chart towards magenta. This whole time.
Let's quickly finish with our unsung hero.
Maybe you're
of the
allergic
year, though,
to
man.
Booze.
Yeah.
No, man. It's Prosecco does hit me sideways.
All of my Asian friends at university were allergic to booze. They all just went.
Actually very
they turned into
Poe
from the Teletubbies when we went out for a drink.
Come then, let's finish with unsung hero of the year, because we did promise
we've not
to
done
people.
That shit.
We haven't done it yet, so we'll rattle
finished.
This off in 5 to 10 minutes very quickly. Mine's Marco Rose. Spoken about him enough in previous podcasts, but including friendlies in 2018-19, including friendlies, by the way, this is 37 games played with Salzburg, 32-1, 5 drawn, none lost, and 106 scored.
106.
Did they just pump some, you know, Austrian skiers about 15-0?
I mean, one of the friendlies probably did end like 11-0, but equally, 106 scored, 26 conceded. Okay.
This is like when you play in the Tongan League and you score like 45 goals a season.
What I will say about Salzburg is that having watched them and Leipzig, they are actually miles ahead of Leipzig. And Celtic, not the best team in Europe, but Celtic Park's always
maximum points, didn't they?
Only like the fourth or fifth team to do that in Europa League. But not a lot of teams go to Celtic Park and exert that amount of control because everyone feeds off the emotion of the crowd. But my God, their movement. Oh, shut up.
It does exist.
You just the green wall.
You can't explain emotion in XG, can you, mate?
Oh, you're narcissist.
It's not emotion, it's football. There's no emotion in football. It's tribal nonsense.
When they came to Glasgow, to paradise, Van Straten.
To paradise in Glasgow.
Yep. All right.
Not on the east side then.
Well, actually, it is.
But yeah, Salzburg for me.
Mate, they were so good. They were so, so good. And I could, yeah, Marco Rose, I could see him taking the Premier League.
It does feel a little bit like if you watch Leipzig, you're watching Bayern in 5 years' time. And if you watch Salzburg, you're watching Leipzig in 2 years' time. So it kind of feels like watch Salzburg and you're seeing the future of football. Leipzig are pretty good this season.
Yeah, but Salzburg
about.
Who do you want, the Dabber or Werner?
I will take Marco Rose every day of the week as my unsung hero. Let's quickly rattle off your two, then we can go apart.
I mean, my unsung hero, I swapped around my sections, didn't I? So he's not exactly unsung. Massimo Allegri. four doubles and one treble since he joined in 2014. Juventus now have 34 league titles.
Four doubles.
I know.
He's won the double every season.
He also won... Do you remember,
minimum
how
double.
The Double. The Michael Double.
How did he win Serie A with AC Milan?
I don't know.
I mean, that was Thiago Silva, Zlatan.
But he's like the last person to break the hegemony. And I remember that... I remember thinking...
Before joining it. That's
yeah,
what I like.
Before, yeah, if you can't beat them, join them.
Buy yourself a ticket into the elite.
But you know, when he finished, like... I don't know, when he finished, like, was it fourth or fifth when he got sat with AC Milan and people were like, fourth? AC? Are you mad?
And everyone went fucking berserk when Juventus signed him. Because I'm writing a thing actually at the moment about sporting directors.
They did. They hated him.
They were livid. And I remember at the time thinking,
they hated him. I remember. I vividly remember like old lady fans going...
We can't not address the phrase, all the grandmas, old lady fans.
All the grandmas kicking off. My favourite sort of fans, by the way, you know my preferences.
Mon PV.
Right. Anyway, so Allegri, let me finish on Allegri. I would go and check that out there if I was you. So
it is in my book.
So only lost three domestic games last year. Oh, I mean this year.
Jesus.
Okay. Winning 30 of 38 games in Serie A, fending off a record-breaking Napoli side, ultimately claiming 95 points. It's sickening, yeah? So finished with a plus 62 goal difference last year. What the fuck is that
plus
all about?
Plus
62, so that's 15 more than Sarri's free-scoring partner pay.
They got a bit lucky.
But plus 62, Pat.
Got a bit lucky.
But when do you associate that with Juventus? Or Serie A in general? Plus 62 means they actually fucking
went for
that
with
games.
Napoli. I don't know.
Maybe in Napoli, maybe a Roma on occasion under Spalletti or...
Were they the best defensive side in the league? No. Were they the best attacking side in the league? No.
No, but that was Atalanta and Roma, wasn't it? Why are you cracking up, man?
No, nothing.
He just thinks I'm pissed. Which, you know.
Right, so still, so I think he deserves to be, not unsung hero, but for manager of the year, still unbeaten in 16 games at this point. So 8 points ahead of Napoli, were 6 points ahead of Inter.
It does
so,
help when you win the league and then your club buys you
Ronaldo. Who's only scored one goal in Europe, by the way, this campaign. Although, he was the quickest Juventus player to
and
10 goals,
banned.
Wasn't he?
He's banned as well.
Less said about in the better.
And the goal was pretty good.
He's managed to slot him into the side and maintain Dybala's numbers and Dybala's general happiness at the same time, which... I mean, despite that seeming like a huge task at the start of the campaign, he's achieved it. CR7 shot numbers are now similar to those of 11, 12s at Real Madrid, almost 7 per 90. His key passes are currently the third best he's put up on 2.2 in his career. So new lease of life there for him in what we regard as one of the best Serie A lineups we've seen in recent times. And they'll need him against old foes Atletico in the next round of the UCL, won't they? But that's my mini shout out to Allegri. Who are we moving on to?
Absolutely can't be considered as an unsung hero.
I know, yeah.
Go on, who's yours?
Yeah,
Patrick?
That's why I turned down Raheem Sterling, because I kind of wanted to talk about Raheem Sterling. But
I thought you were going to say Raheem Sterling.
He deserves a proper conversation from us, not like eight drinks.
I feel like the latter half of the season, he's got credit for both what he said off the pitch and his performances on the pitch, and so I kind of feel like he's not fair to put in this. So I just went for one of my favourite players, and I went for Edinson Cavani. Do you know how many goals Cavani got last season?
36
in all comps.
Do you know how many I would have got playing up front for PSG last season?
Oh, that's the proper gammon response.
Four.
No, yeah, maybe none. That's a good turnover.
Yeah, four out of 35 appearances up front. Yeah, okay. He played 47 games. He got 40 goals the year before, 49 in 50.
The transition from bridesmaid to bride was good, man.
And now he's a bridesmaid again. He's gone from being second fiddle to Zlatan to being third fiddle to Neymar and Mbappe.
Humped and dumped at the moment.
But this is the thing, to play off the left wing when Zlatan was there, then to go to being a centre forward, and then now to be third fiddle to Neymar and Mbappe, and still to be putting up elite numbers, I think that deserves some credit. To me, he's what Falcao always was kind of assumed to be.
He's so true.
He's been the standard of Diego Costa at his best for several years now. So he scored over 30 goals in all competitions 6 times in his career, and they weren't all in France. 3 times in Italy, 3 times in France. Not to put that in context, Shearer did that 4 times. Zlatan did it 5 times. Henri did it 5 times. Cavani's done it 6 times.
Yeah, I mean, Cavani, as much as I joke, he is just a beast.
He scored 89 goals in the last 2 seasons. Aguero has scored 92 in the last 3 seasons.
But he misses chances from 5 yards out, Pato.
He actually does do that.
He does do that consistently.
I don't even deny that he does that. Like, Cavani does do that, but he also will score some low percentage chances because he's so good in the air.
He also got, yeah.
And he's capable of making...
Do you remember that header against Celtic? He went fucking full Pythagoras.
I mean,
the Matrix.
Nobody remembers it.
In the air, he's unreal. Fucking yeah, no one remembers. He's got a point, but also three goals in 4 appearances at the World Cup, and to give an example of the kind of chance I think he finishes that other people don't, you know, that one against Portugal, he scored 2 against Portugal, which put them through, and when he picks the ball up on the wing, pings a perfect pass over to the other wing for Suarez and makes the perfect run into the back stick to finish it. Yeah, it comes a little bit off his shoulder / the side of his face. But that's one of my favourite goals of the World Cup. I think that sums up everything I love about Suarez and Cavani.
You love the back stick as well.
Oh, God. Anyway, I just think that there are a lot of players who have been overrated their whole career. He's one of the ones who's been underrated. And I think Edinson Cavani will never be one of those guys that people talk about as having been one of the best players in the world like they do with Zlatan. But for me, Edinson Cavani has been one of the most reliable strikers in the world.
But like
for
his countryman, Diego Forlán.
I was going to say the exact same thing. He's Forlán 2.0.
I think he's actually more reliable, though, as a goal scorer than Forlán. Yeah. Forlán's a bit more of an all-rounder. But yeah, I agree. And I just think Cavani, it makes me sad that Cavani is still seen as like a bottler or whatever. Don't get me wrong, I do think he fucks up a fair number of like big chances. But do I think that he's a top quality striker?
Yeah, the game against Barcelona in the was it the 4-5-1 defeat?
He scored the goal in that game though. And he scored an outrageous goal in that
one,
game.
The one-on-one was a little bit unforgivable.
But the goal he scored in that game is so fucking good. That should have put it beyond all doubt. It's the defence that really lost them that time.
Yeah, they conceded like 5 or 6.
So I look at Cavani and I'm like, 3 goals in 4 at the World Cup, 40 and 47 last season. He's got 10 in 10 so far this season.
We're giving it to you, Pato.
In Liga.
Cavani is our unsung hero.
What do you mean?
Of 2018.
Oh, cheers, bro.
Massimo.
So yeah. We've gone Cavani as...
the underrated multiple double.
So just to recap, we've got Cavani as our unsung hero. We've got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer taking over as Manchester United as the surprise.
I don't think I voted on that. I think you did that by yourself.
Yeah,
but I'll take it.
Come on, let's not.
That is fucking.
Let's not be ridiculous. We've got Laporte as our signing of the season, and we've got manager as Pep Guardiola.
Yep.
Are we all happy with that? An agreement. If you want to get involved and let us know your answers to those 4 categories, send us a tweet as well. This is probably our last podcast of 2018, which means it's Patrick Van Straten's last podcast until at least April 2019.
No, until March. I'm
until
back
March,
in March.
Sorry.
You not check the emails?
We haven't actually spoken about this, but I'm away January and February next year. But it's kind of because I feel like I've been running on empty a little bit, and so I'm hoping.
As he said, running on empty. His mic just failed.
My mic just swung down. Basically, I just feel like I'll be a better version of me
if I come back in March. It's the Pep Guardiola New York sabbatical.
Yeah, and it's not long. It's what, 8 episodes of Sunday Vibes, essentially.
I need a little rest before I come back and produce the PVS baby that everyone's been clamoring
for.
Can't
wait.
By everyone, I mean Olivia Dodd.
God, he's going to be cherubic.
He's going to be a fucking...
Gee.
Yeah. He's going to be such an arsehole.
Note that time code down, James. He just dropped the C-bomb.
Anyway, yeah, so...
for only the second time on this podcast.
I'm trying to get tickets at the moment for PSG versus Man United in the Champions League. But
I'll join you for that.
I don't fancy my chance. That actually would be fun.
When Ole Gunnar Solskjaer bangs 6 past PSG.
Ole! Is he going to bring himself on off the bench?
Probably. Do a better job than fucking Lukaku.
I mean, we have been going at it for 3 years trying to grow this channel, haven't we? And we've achieved like a certain degree of success. And now is probably the right time just to take a couple months out, isn't it? I think well deserved
break, mate.
We're gonna bloody miss you though, mate, and you know, all your cynicism and all your, you know, negative energy and excellent analysis and what else, checkered shirts and
but it's probably
immaculately kept beards.
In the meantime on the podcast, I guess we're gonna have a few guests, maybe. We're gonna have a Dougie Critchley will make a few appearances,
and
I'd imagine
actually you guys, the FD Ultras who listen to the podcast, won't pop probably miss Pat as much as others because we will have a couple of phone-ins, a couple of Skypes, yeah. I imagine, and he'll still be pretty central to these productions, just not in person, right, Pat?
I will try and Skype in from Paris. That's where I'm going to be for
I will
those
try.
Two
that
I'm
sounds
be in
ominous.
Paris. So I will try and Skype in if you'll have me. So we'll see if we can make that work.
I respect it. Right. That's it for today's episode of Sunday Vibes Extra Time. If you haven't already, make sure you rate us 5 stars and leave a kind review about Patrick Van Straten as he is about to leave. Get involved in all the debate on Twitter. Yeah, follow
if
us.
If you've not rated us, don't come back.
Yeah, true. Don't follow... Actually, do follow us. I nearly said don't. Sorry, one per second. Do follow us on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks very much for listening. Oh, fuck.
Oh, McLaren.
Happy 2018, motherfuckers.
Goodbye. Shalom.